Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio and to the Shabbat program. It looks like we have the full chorus of participants this evening, the Larianator and JB. How are you, fellas?
Doing good.
Good.
Everything's wonderful, just peachy.
Okay, well, Mr. Peachy, thank you very much for doing the two shows with Scott. They were wonderful. He was extraordinarily delighted to do them with you.
Well, good. I enjoyed doing them as well. I really did.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate you guys covering for me last week. While we were on vacation, we thought we had sold the house, but the fellow that bought it reneged on his end of the bargain. People are prone to do that, Yahweh has told us. Been done to him. So if it's been done to him by a few billion people, I shouldn't be surprised that little old me gets to experience it.
Yeah, I'm guessing he couldn't pay the water bill, you know.
No, this guy is a gazillionaire. In fact, we actually had a billionaire look at the house today. A really nice man and his wife and his daughter. Made it the old-fashioned way, actually. Built his own business and earned it. We'll see.
Wow.
I haven't heard from him since. So we'll see how it goes, but right now it's out of escrow. So I probably have a little shorter fuse than I would normally have. This is a first time in 120 escrows that I've had one or the other party welch on a deal. So that part is not fun. I received an email today from somebody who's in the heading of the email called it slander. I don't want anybody guessing who sent the email because I don't want to. I don't want to cause anybody any undue grief. So the person will be anonymous, and even if one of you knows who it is, I would appreciate it if you would leave it be anonymous. I'm not fond of the word slander. I've very seldom seen the word slander used accurately. This was addressed towards the Larianator. It was also directed to me because it said that the slander was being communicated on the air. And so since I'm of the group of us, I am the primary gabber on the air with the two shows. I would assume that I am being accused of being slanderous. And the first statement in this was that, and it's primarily directed at the Larianator, is that that the notion that Yahweh doesn't want us to praise Him is erroneous. And the
oh really
yes. And by the way, it's really, this is going to get into semantics, because there are some statements that do have us showing baraking on behalf of Yahweh, where, you know, it's probably 20 to 1 that has him kneeling down to lift us up. There are, there's about 1 in 40 maybe that is... Dodd has a tendency to wax poetic. He loves symbolic language because he's writing songs. And one of the places in a song, he puts Barak in first person. And so we're going to deal with that statement because the context is extraordinarily revealing as to why he was lifting up Yahweh. And when you understand the context as to why he was lifting up Yahweh, then you see this is not a praise ceremony. And so I just like to deal with it. This is probably the only thing I'm going to say on it. I'm not going to share my translation other than on this program verbally. Let's go through what the first of many statements, it was, bless YHWH at all times. His praise is continually in my mouth. End quote. Psalm 34:1. So, I decided that, you know, I had nothing else to do today. I would translate Psalm 34. There's actually a verse before 1 and 2. And this is how it reads. And I'm not going to claim that my translation is perfect. There's other alternatives, but we're going to go through it word for word because I think this is important. And then what I'd like to do is to return to the passage we were trying to translate because there's more to learn from it. The psalm actually begins not at bless Yahweh, or bless YHWH at 34:1. I don't know why people leave off the opening of a psalm because it's important. The psalm actually begins, and 34:1 therefore would be of Dode or from Dode. And from Dode would mean, JB, you've translated DWD. What does it mean?
Dode? Love.
Yeah. Love, right? So, of Lode is from the beloved, from the perspective of love. And it begins with repetitively, Shana, once again, a second time, maybe even a third time, but repetitively, once again, yet again, exercising discretion, which is ta'am, demonstrating good judgment. Ta'am can mean demonstrating good taste. You know, when we demonstrate good taste, we're doing things that are appropriate in that setting. You know, we're doing things that are considered tasteful. Being discriminating, rational and sane. So, what follows here is in the from the perspective of Dode, repetitively exercising discretion, demonstrating good judgment and good taste, being discriminating, rational and sane. So this is the antithesis of ignorant and irrational. Before, which would be Pene, in the presence of Amalek, or Abimelech. Now, Ab in the Hebrew, anybody want to guess what Ab is in Hebrew?
Father, we know. Yeah,
Ab, father.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So, by the way, this person wrote me the letter, used Abba. Abba is Paul's corruption of the Hebrew. It's not Abba in Hebrew.
Yeah, it's Ab. And
it's Ab.
I've said that. Maybe they go to sleep at night with their blankie. I mean, I don't know. You know,
I don't know.
I just know
that if you're going to try to use Hebrew, use Hebrew. There is no
right.
Abba in Hebrew. It's Ab.
Yeah.
Paul misquoted the Hebrew. Something he did regularly. But it's then Ab, and then the letter Yod followed by Melech. All right? What is Melech in Hebrew?
That would be messenger.
Right, or message. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can be. Messenger is the primary direct connotation, but it can also be message. All right? So this verse, and the Y in front of a name means that it is. I am the message. The father, I am the father and the message, or the father of my message. This man is named for that he is the father of his message. He is the Paul for Christianity. He is the Muhammad of Islam. He's taking credit for his own religious doctrine. His own spiritual message. It's his. He's the father. The father of the religion is you could say the father of the spiritual message. So he is the Paul.
That would be Yahweh.
Well, the father of the Malach would be Yahweh. But there's the Y there, so it's not. This fellow isn't talking about the message of the father. That would just simply be Ab Melech. This is Abi Melech. So he, in this case, he is the father of his own message. That's what the man's name means.
Okay.
All right. So he has a message that is his own, and he is he's in the role of Paul. So you've got a guy in the role of Paul, a guy in the role of Muhammad, and so Dode says repetitively, exercising good judgment, demonstrating discretion and good taste, being discriminating and rational and sane before the man who claimed to be the father of his own message, Abimelech, with whom I dismissed and tossed aside. So the perspective here is you've got a guy that claims to have his own special message. And,
well, we got a problem here.
Yeah, Dode is saying, Dode is speaking of this guy. He says, repetitively, I am there in front of him. I'm exercising discretion and good judgment in front of this guy who's the father of his own message. And he says, so I dismissed him and I tossed him aside.
Yeah,
I killed and drove him away. I separated myself from him. Okay? So this is Dode, Garrosh, showing discernment and good judgment by tossing this guy and his message aside. He's discarding him. Now it's in that from that framework that what was quoted of Psalm 34:1 follows. So you got to know, you know, who is being talked to, and this is Dode saying, you know, I'm exercising good judgment here. I'm very thoughtful about this. I'm very forthright and discerning about this, and I'm doing it repetitively, and this guy that's got his own message, I'm tossing him aside. I'm separating myself from him. Why?
This is just some religious moron.
That is correct. And Dode says, so he walked away. He departed. So when, you know, Dode gave him both barrels, you know, and the guy just walked away. Now, that being the case, in that context, he says, Yahweh, I will always choose to lift up in love. Kol Barak. I totally want to express the virtues while expressing my complete admiration constantly. His adoration, his renown and reputation is in my mouth. All right, so what is Dode doing here? Dode is doing a Larry here. You know, you were the actual attackee on this particular email. Dode was doing a Larry. He was saying to the person who is pontificating their own message, he was constantly and repetitively exercising discretion, confronting him in a way that dismissed him and tossed he and his message aside. So the fellow left. And Dode is saying, I always, you want to know about me? I always lift up Yahweh in love. And
they, of course, have to copy edit that in his praise, because then that gives them a reason to come and sing hymns in their church building.
And it doesn't say his praise. It's Tahilah. His renown, his reputation is in my mouth. Hey. So what you have here is that rather than capitulating to this guy's rhetoric, Dode gave him both barrels and said, you know, anytime I'm in this situation, I'm going to lift up Yahweh. How do you lift up Yahweh? Particularly, how do you lift up and put on your mouth or in your mouth his renown, reputation, and your affection for who he is? How would you do that?
You're going to use your mouth. Words.
You're going to quote his words, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that is really the only way, practically, that you can lift up lovingly, constantly, the renown, reputation, and your admiration for Yahweh in your mouth. To cite his testimony. That's what Dode was doing.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what's going on with people today. There's a breaking point, a separation point, I think. You know, I did a posting about, you know, the fact there's no prayer in the Torah. And there really isn't.
Yeah.
There's people
no,
who communicate.
There's five times the word for prayer, which is really a conversation, is written in the Torah. And I know that, JB, you have done a study on this. I happen to remember the result of your study. But so I'll ask you the question. If you don't remember, I do remember. How many of those five times that the word for prayer was listed, written in the Torah, was it Yahweh instructing the individual to pray?
That would be a great big goose egg.
That is correct. Zero. There are five times when an individual had a conversation with God. Did God, any one of those five times, said, boy, that is really what I wanted. I am so glad they did that. I'm going to do something special for that individual because they did that.
Nope.
Nope. So there's five times it's mentioned. Now, you know, it's mentioned that in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that Dode committed adultery, that he had his general sent off to war hoping he'd be killed so that he could engage in adultery with his widow.
Mm-hmm.
It says that in the Torah. Do you think it says that in the Torah because that's what Yahweh wants us to do?
No. These are all the confusing things that the, you know, it's Eliyah went out there and laid the BS God to waste and showed Yahweh was the true God of the universe and the creator. And what did they do? They fell on their faces and worshiped. Well, I believe they did that. I believe that really happened.
Probably did.
And that's because they had been trained by Lord Baal and did not know who Yahweh was.
And so they see, you know, another kind of a miraculous thing, and they've been conditioned. You see a miraculous thing, you get down and you worship. You know, what did Abraham do one of the times that Yahweh says, listen, pal, we're going to do it this way. Now, this is what it's all about. He fell on his face. What did Yahweh tell him to do? You stay down there because that's what I want. No, he says, stand up, look up, pay attention to me. Come on,
look up, look at me, walk with
me. Get real.
Right, get real.
And there's this mindset that just because it's in the, you know, quote unquote, in the Bible, that it's endorsed by God. I remember reading a story one time about a church where a pastor used the story of Lot's daughters getting him drunk to sleep with him to justify incest.
Yeah.
It's like, God didn't.
He really did that?
Yeah.
He really did that, JB?
Yeah. Oh, I can believe it.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And he was probably engaged
in it. I can believe it, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's probably why he brought it up. You know?
Larry, you and I have gone over the passage in Daniel, where Daniel says that he got down to offer a prayer from an east window overlooking Jerusalem, and he got down on his knees for that prayer to Jerusalem. And if you read that just like that, you'd say, well, God's endorsing us getting on our knees and offering a prayer. But no, not in context. You know, remember that story in context?
Yeah. First of all, he went to
the Babylonian king.
It's like the first time I really ever opened my mind to it, because you blow by it if you don't really consider it. He went to the highest part of the house.
Right.
And opened the curtains so everyone could see him. Now, knowing something about Yahweh, I know he is not into people being showy and religious on any level.
Right.
So right away, that guy, I got it. I went, okay.
And what happened, if you read the context, the viceroys that were jealous of Daniel's abilities tried to get Daniel to be condemned by the king. And so the viceroys came up with this idea that all of his viceroys should bow down before the king and show their allegiance to the king. And then they went to Daniel, knowing that he wouldn't do this, and therefore that Daniel would be condemned, and said, Daniel, if you want to keep your job, you want to keep your life, you're going to have to bow down before this king and swear your allegiance to him. And so Daniel said, I'll show you. So in front of everybody, he walked up and said, you know, I will swear my allegiance over here. That's Jerusalem. That's the source of reconciliation. I'm going to go in that direction. That is the only place that I will swear my allegiance. And so in context, it's a beautiful statement of Daniel showing his complete disgust for bowing down before lords and kings and religious leaders, you know, because they actually stated that the king was a god and representative of God. Therefore, you know, that's why Daniel had to bow down before him. And Daniel said, the hell with you. And not only am I not going to do it, I'm going to go and demonstrate where my allegiance falls. It's a beautiful statement. The context is important. All right, so we have this introduction. We have Dode saying that repetitively he exercised good judgment and discretion, and he came before the man who was the father of his own message, whom he dismissed and he tossed aside. And he did so, and the man walked away. And then he said, it's Yahweh that I will always choose to lift up in love. Constantly, his renown, his reputation, his adoration will be in my mouth. He's citing Yahweh's testimony in front of this man. He says, that's what I always do. He was, you know, for the person that wrote the letter who was against you, the fact is, Dode was doing exactly what you do, Larry. Now, it's more to it than that. There's more to it than that. It says, in Yahweh, my soul, so ba or with, so ba can be in or with, Yahweh, my soul, my nefesh, my breath, my consciousness, my unique person and personality, shall boast, shall continually sing, rejoicing, shall show complete confidence, brilliantly radiating light, being enlightened. So my soul, then you can choose any one of these definitions. I'm going to go over them again, and there's a few more, because the word is halal. It is the basis of hallelujah. It means to, at the root, it means to radiate light. But because radiating light has other connotations, like being enlightened, when your countenance is bright, you're considered rejoicing, and so there's other aspects of it that are derivatives from the root, which is halal, which means to radiate light. In fact, the root of the word speaks directly of the light that comes from heavenly bodies. Okay, so that's the root of this word. So this idea that my soul will praise, my soul will, this person wants to translate it praise. It's not praise. It's in Yahweh, my soul, and the first definition, because halal is also Satan's first name, right? So halal is like a lot of Hebrew words. It's like Anna, which will appear, by the way, later in this context. Anna's primary definition is to respond and to reply, to sing, to provide testimony. That's its primary definition. Secondary definition is to afflict, to debase. Halal is Satan's first name. Now, it's a perfect first name because Satan radiates light. He is a malach, after all. So he is a radiant, beaming, light individual. But he's also arrogant and boastful. And so halal has both of those connotations. Now, one of the things that Yahweh, that Dode is saying here by using this word, because you don't have to use the boast aspect, you can just say, in Yahweh, my soul radiates light. And you would be at the primary definition. But the secondary definition, I actually think, fits here. I don't think there's anything wrong. I do, and I don't feel uncomfortable with the notion of, I don't know what that music is from. I don't feel uncomfortable with the idea of boasting in Yahweh. I'm proud to be his kid. I'm proud to be part of his covenant. I'm proud to know him. I'll boast all day long in it.
And that's what
I think
do
that's
here
what
every week.
Say. Right. That's, you know, there is absolutely nothing but pride in being associated with his name and his covenant and his family. And I'm not the least bit ashamed to say I'm proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, in Yahweh,
I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, it's the best decision I ever made in my life. And I'm proud of being part of his family. Do I think being part of his family makes me better? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm proud of it. I think we should be. Can you imagine not being proud of being part of Yahweh's family?
Yeah, you might not use his name as an example.
Yeah, you might not. Yeah, you might not. In Yahweh, my soul shall boast, continually singing and rejoicing, completely confident, brilliantly radiating light and enlightened, halal, shall sing a joyous song, shall shout boastfully and joyously in admiration, illuminated and shining, conveying an uplifting melody and song, and always confident, extolling the virtues and character. Now, the root of halal denotes light emerging from a heavenly body. Now, it's interesting. Halal was written in a stem we don't see very often. It's the Hit-Pa-El stem. Very rare. The Hit-Pa-El stem. Now, what the Hit-Pa-El stem means is that the subject here, which is Dotsol, is doing this on her. Nefesh is a feminine noun. On her own initiative. She's not being forced, not being compelled to do this. And that her brilliant and uplifting song is designed to bring joy, which is the purpose of this word, to the object. The object is Yahweh. The subject is Dotsol. The object is Yahweh. And so with this stem, it's saying that of his own volition, without being compelled or forced, Dotsol has decided to bring joy into Yahweh's life by doing this. And so it's all by himself, you know, just individually, without assistance, this is what Dotsol is doing. It's a pretty cool way to express it. It was also written in the imperfect, which means it's ongoing behavior, and that it was, now this was really interesting. It was also scribed in the Jusiv mood, which is third-person volition. Now, as a third-person volition, that means that the soul here, you know, is like her, and her is a third person. So it means that the soul, Dotsol, has chosen and desires doing this as a matter of choice. So it's reinforcing the stem that says this wasn't a result of being compelled, this wasn't a result of being forced, but instead is a matter of choice.
Yeah, we're just back to free will, not commanded right. to do so, and so forth.
Right.
It's
right.
not like you're sitting there at the local circus and somebody says, okay, it's time to sing, everybody sing.
Right.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
But so this says, in Yahweh, my soul boasts, continually sings. In Yahweh, my soul rejoices. In Yahweh, my soul is completely confident. And in Yahweh, my soul is brilliantly illuminated. In Yahweh, or with Yahweh, my soul is enlightened. Got any problem with any of those?
No.
Nope.
No. Have you? I can tell you, I have experienced every one of those things. In Yahweh, and with Yahweh, my soul boasts. It continually sings. It rejoices. It is completely confident. It's brilliantly illuminated. Radiates his light. It's joyous. Showing admiration, illuminated, shining. Sounds good to me. I don't have any issue with any of that, and that's what the purpose of this program is. Now, it goes on a little further in Psalm Mizmor 34:2. And it says, those who answer and respond, anah. And I will go back to Anah here in a moment and give you the alternatives. Those who answer and respond shall continually listen and actually receive the message, and they will be glad. All right, so that summation of this, that added statement, which you know was not included in the I bless Yahweh at all times, his praise is constantly in my mouth, what we're now saying is that what he is saying is because his soul constantly rejoices, confident, brilliantly illuminated by Yahweh, when he's with Yahweh, in Yahweh, that those who answer and respond constantly listen and they receive the message. Or you could even reverse it and say, those who continually listen and receive the message answer and respond. But what you have here is Ana and Shama. And it's A-N-A-W, which every lexicon says is based upon, A-N-A-H. Fellas, we've seen Anah, A-N-A-H, countless times.
Yeah, a few times, I'd say.
When Yahweh uses Anah at his invitations, he says, you know, I'd really like you to answer and respond to my invitation, Anah. And then he says that he wants us to answer and respond to his invitation and come into the presence of the maternal aspect of his light. So Anah's primary meaning is to answer and respond. This is Anah with a W, but everyone says, yeah, it's based on Anah. And so in your lexicons, what you will see is them trying to change this so that it reflects the tertiary meaning of Anah, which is to afflict. You know, Anah is one of those words of you can choose to respond to Yahweh's invitation, come into the presence of his maternal light.
Or you could choose to afflict yourself. That's right. Yeah, those are your choices.
And by the way, Yahweh afflicted himself so we wouldn't be afflicted. And if you don't come into the presence of the spiritual mother and don't answer the invitation, your soul will be afflicted in the sense of it will be debased to nothingness. So, I mean, Anah is perfectly suited to that because it shows both sides of the choice. If you answer the invitation, if you don't answer the invitation.
Right, but we've been through this before. Religious copy editors always take the low road because they're designing a religious deity that has you in submission. We know that's not true of Yahweh.
So they take Anah to and make it the lowly and humble, the debased, you know, the rejected. They listen. In fact, they change Shema to obey, but nonetheless, Shema means to listen, and it's telling us who is listening. And so those that are listening could be, and there is one aspect of Anah that's in the lexicons that could be accurate, which is the those in need listen. I don't know about you, but I need what Yahweh has to offer. I don't just want it. I need it. So I don't have
a problem. That's true. I mean, that is true. Absolutely, that's true. Yeah,
but
sure.
I would never, I think we're all, okay. In Hebrew, if there is a verbal root of a word, the actionable aspect of the word always defines the noun. It's like Kadosh, and that the Christians will call a New Testament, and yet Kadosh as a verb means to renew.
Renew, repair. Yeah.
Right.
It obviously
reaffirm.
Does.
Right.
I mean, always, otherwise, I'm sorry.
Yeah. What you want to do, if you wanted to define a word in Hebrew, is the first thing you do is to say, does this word have a verbal root? If it has a verbal root, go to it. That's the definition. Always, without exception, the verbal root defines the word. So, in this case, Anah has a verbal root. It's Anah. And the primary meaning of Anah is to answer and respond, to sing, to provide testimony. So, in this case, those who answer and respond shall continually listen and actually receive the message. This is Shama. So, yeah, if you listen to Yahweh's message, you're going to respond. You're going to answer. Because he's offering us an invitation to be part of his family. And what is the response of someone who answers the message regarding Yahweh's testimony? They're happy. This is Shama. They're delighted. They're outwardly expressing a joyous attitude. Are happy and rejoicing. That's the context, friends. Now,
what were they saying the context is? I mean,
they did. They just took it out of context.
You know what I see, and I just hear me out here. There, you know, I went over this thing. You know, do you really think Yahweh was talking about a wild boar, or is there more to it?
Right.
And you know this is over in Dabarim,
right?
And this is he goes through. He says He says, and therefore the wild boar, okay, which is a total description of, you know, the people who follow Ishtar and
right.
Lent and,
right.
you know,
Tammuz.
The very basis of
right. Weeping
of
for Tammuz is the wild boar. The wild boar, they eat for Ishtar, Easter, the Christmas ham.
Yeah.
The Easter ham. Yes,
and
the wild boar.
He says, indeed, the hoof is divided. And what I see there is that's exactly right. The Christians see, okay, this Messiah is set apart. Although they change his name and all,
right.
they understand that much. But that's where their knowledge
right.
ends, right there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But and then it goes on to say, but not a cud. So these people
right.
have not chewed on the word
right.
at all. They don't understand
right.
what he says. I come to fulfill the Torah. You know, when I was a Christian and I knew absolutely nothing but what a King James Version Biblia said, I thought, well, okay, he's out there being a really good guy helping the poor. I mean, really,
right.
that's about
right.
the extent of what you get out of it. Which is really sad that anybody can be taken by that once the truth has been given to them. Look, these were clearly Moed Mikra he was fulfilling. Okay, so there's not a cud. So it's unclean according to you. Now, in the very next statement, he says, from the preaching and publishing of the creatures like them, you should not continually consume. And I think what's happening here is all this years of sharing with certain people that religious material is completely corrupt, they're throwing out the window over the pork issue, if you will.
Yeah.
And they're not looking at things like, Yahweh just told you, don't use their material. That's what he just said there.
Correct.
So if you're busy thumbing through your Biblia to try to buttress your positions, you're dead. You're wrong. You're doing the exact opposite of what he told you to do, or what he shared with you to do. And that's what I wanted to say. I mean, that it sounds to me that what they're doing is going into common religious translations and saying, oh, but look at this. You know, isn't that it?
Correct.
Isn't that what's happening
absolutely.
Here?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, well, then they're stupid.
That's my view, too. If you choose not to eat pork, that's fine. I'm not going to go encourage you to eat it. If you choose not to eat pork and you're boisterous about it, and you're doing it because you think it's a law that God wants you to obey, and you are belligerent about it, then the hell with you. Then what you're doing is you're mispresenting what it means to observe the Torah. It's why Yosha said, eat what's set before you. He did that for a reason. It was important that people did not act as if the Torah was a set of restrictive laws. So if you want to follow Dad's advice and say, you know, swine is not good for you, then that's fine. And for, you know, most of human history, it wasn't healthy. If you want to follow Yosha's advice when he was citing Dabarim and said, eat what's put before you because Yahweh created an exemption and said, so long as you're thoughtful about it, you know, you can eat what you want, then that's fine. My only issue here, and I would never tell somebody, I just think you ought to make your diet nothing but shellfish and lobster and pork and catfish.
Yeah,
I'm not
that
saying
either,
that,
you know.
But I am telling you that Yahweh created an exemption for a very specific reason, and if you don't like the exemption, then you've got a real problem with Yosha, because Yosha would have been contrary to the Torah when he said, eat what's put before you, and when he said, it's not based upon what a person puts into their mouth, but what comes out of their mouth that they are defiled. And
yeah,
so,
that's in Matnya. So,
right.
Yeah,
so, yeah. So, you know, you've got a situation here where I'm not going to encourage anybody to disregard what it says in the Torah about wild boar swine not being listed as good to eat. But when you make it when you're belligerent about it, when you suggest that the Torah states that you must not do this, and that to do it is wrong, and you become literally aggressive in your proposition regarding it. Yeah, I'm not going to use the term religiously here, but it that's the word that crossed my mind. I just decided to be less confrontational. But you fixate on it, then I think you're doing something that is very inappropriate and misleading, and will reinforce the old stereotypes. And I think it's particularly true because of the fact that the primary basis, the primary justification for Rabbinic Judaism is kosher and the rules on what you can and cannot eat. And they justify kosher because they said that the Torah is not sufficiently explicit, and that their oral law is necessary to explain what you can and cannot do. Well, I think Yahweh was deliberately not explicit. I think that it was by design that he wants you to think through this. That's really the last I wish to say on that subject. But since this other issue of praising God came up, there is absolutely nothing wrong with boasting in Yahweh, reveling in Yahweh's attributes. I think God is really cool. I just think that he is approachable, lovable, straightforward. The offer he gave is wonderful. He's fun to be around. He's funny. He likes to party. He loves good food. God knows I love good food. Lord knows it too, probably. Likes good wine, likes song, likes people that like to think, enjoys sharing, enjoys doing things together. I think he's a cool dude. I like him.
Can I bring something up here?
I don't think that's praising him, by the way. I just think that's accurately reflecting and enjoying who he is. We could have had a lot of different kind of gods that created the universe. We won the jackpot. The perfect God created the universe.
But there are really a lot of people out there that think these Hallmark moments, oh, I love you, be with me, I see this stuff all the time. They think this is what he's talking about. Now, me, I call that, ass kissing. You don't just talk to the air and throw it out there for everybody to see that and just show how loving of an individual you are. I mean, this is just nonsense. I had a friend of mine post these Noahide laws on my wall, showing me how ridiculous and ludicrous that they are. I mean, one of them is, you guys aren't supposed to keep the Shabbat. You're just lowly Gentiles, and if you do that, you should be put to death. Nonsense like
that. Where are the Noahide laws? Because somebody wrote me on them, and I couldn't find them in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
Yeah, well, they're not in the Torah. You'd have to go to the rabbis to get all that down.
Okay, all right.
We were having a pretty good discussion about it.
Decoder ring. All right.
Right. Here are the people that are supposed to be teaching us how to live, and now we have to tell them because they've gotten lost in religious nonsense. Right. And a Jewish a follower of the rabbis jumped in and started, guess where he said, was, we all knocked the Talmud. And then he said, if not for the Talmud, how would you know what to eat?
Yeah,
that
exactly.
was his starting point with Rabbinic Judaism.
But that, by the way, that is universal. That is, if you study the justifications for Rabbinic Judaism and the Talmud, almost every site that is being honest, that is being forthright, that is laying it out there the way it is, will tell you that the best justification for Rabbinic Judaism is there's no way to be kosher without it because Yahweh was not sufficiently explicit.
Well, there's people out there now, saying that we've made a religion out of not being religious. Well, Yahweh points out not to be religious over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I don't, he tells us not to imitate anything the goy do. Isn't that what he tells us?
Absolutely.
I don't know of a single religion out there that doesn't worship a religious deity, get on their knees, observe prayer, have little religious meetings, and so on and so forth. We're not to do any of those things.
Their public ceremonies, they have national days of prayer, and they get on their knees, they bow their heads.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and what does Yahweh say about the prayers of those who are not Torah observant?
No, it's an abomination.
Right, an abomination.
He calls all the ways of the Goyim disgusting. And if people want to open their mind a little bit and take a look at what he's saying, he says he hates religious imagery.
Yes.
He hates their buildings. He wished they were all torn down. And then we have people who claim to know Yahweh, and they don't know Yahweh. I'll tell you that right now. They don't know him.
Right.
And they want to have some of a religious deity wrapped up in him. You know, you can't hold on to Babylon while you're walking out of Babylon. So, you know, Dode talked about this. He talked about people with divided loyalties. Either you're going to be a religious monkey, or you're going to find out who Yahweh is. I mean, imagine if you yourself created a universe and you wanted to have a relationship with people, and you had all these people tying all these religious notions to you that were all despicable. I mean, they're all despicable.
Yeah. Yeah, and
getting on your knees and afflicting yourself and
avoiding a particular type of meat.
Yeah, I just don't have the words anymore to deal with these people. Either they see Yahweh for who he is, and he is not. He wants to be greeted as an individual. And if you want to greet individuals on your knees, I suggest you either go to the bathhouse or go to prison, and they'll be happy to have you meet them.
Most individuals that I know, particularly in a masculine way, that express attributes and character and interests that I find attractive, that I find beneficial, that I find that I would like that I enjoy being with. I use the term around them. I do not say I love that individual. I say I like that individual. I like them. I like being around them. Yahweh introduces himself to us as an individual. He says, I want to be known as an individual. And I am much more comfortable saying that I like him. I like being around him. I like who he is. I like him.
That's exactly how I see it. You know, I used to hear my wife tell people, okay, I love you. Okay, we love you. Bye. I love you. You know, and I said, well, you use that term pretty loosely. Well, it turns out in Persian they don't have a difference between like and love.
Right.
Do you know that?
I didn't know that.
I mean, in today's Persian. Yeah, that's just a fact.
Wow.
So they just say, I love you. It means, you know, I like you.
Yeah.
That would kind of, you know, and see, that's a much older language than English. So I can see that. And so, you know, I get more of a an energy boost, if you will, out of somebody saying, you know, that guy, Larry Hendricks, I really like him. Than somebody fraudulently saying, I love him, who really doesn't know me.
Right. You know, I have to tell you, I like you, Larry. I like you, JB. I would not go so far as to say, if I said I loved you, it'd just be really awkward. You know, just awkward.
Yeah, exactly. It's a strange beast. And it's also goes to sort of this fraudulent idea of loving everything and loving everybody. There's a fella on YouTube who's a Turkish guy, and he plays this sort of sweet music, and he has a big sign, and he says, hug me. And every people walking by, they stop and lay everything down. They go over and hug him. And really what he's teaching is I accept everything and everybody in every way.
Right.
Which is really sort of an opposite of Yahweh.
Or
that means I have
God being discerning and exercising good judgment. I think it's important that we be real. I think Yahweh likes it when we're real. And he responds in kind. And it's just important for us not to try to be flattering, not try to impress somebody with our position. Let's get to know Yahweh. If you like the God that you get to know, then take the time to learn what it is that he wants, what he's offering, and how to respond.
You'll have an eternity to depend on him.
Right.
Then you'll love him. You know?
Yeah,
I mean, it's...
I love my wife. I love my children.
Because you put years into that relationship.
Right. I would die for. I'll make enormous sacrifices for my wife and for my children because I love my wife and I love my children. And that's the nature of the covenant. Yahweh loves us as if we were married. Yahweh loves us because we are his children. It's what you would expect in that kind of a relationship. Now, you know, Larry, you are like me. I don't love my father. I don't even like my father. But I really do like my Heavenly Father. I won the lottery on eternal fathers, and I got the short end of the stick on earthly fathers.
There you go. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Oh, you know, and for me, for example, that what's called the fifth commandment, which is really the second of seven instructions on the second tablet, where it says, honor your mother and father. You know, before I read the entirety of the second, which says that fathers corrupt their children to the third and fourth generation, and to put it in context that he's talking about our spiritual mother and our heavenly father, you know, I was a real downer for me because my father was a racist and anti-Semite, and he was mean and hurtful. And so, you know, it was impossible to uphold him, to honor him, to view him as meritorious and significant. But it's no problem doing that with my heavenly father and spiritual mother. All right, I want to return to the passage that we'll just complete it tonight. It was Bamidbar in the wilderness, number 622. We just won't get into all of the detail about how we translate tonight. We'll just communicate it and reinforce why it's being conveyed in this way. And the reason is that Yahweh is offering us seven things. He wants to give us seven things, and let's celebrate those seven things. And it says so. And Yahweh, he elected to speak the eternal word to influence Moshe as God, approach by saying, I know I've been through this, but it bears repeating. Yahweh used his word to influence. That is his tool. It's his means of introducing himself. It's his means of inviting us to join him. It's his means of conveying who he is and what he wants. It's his means of providing us with the terms and conditions of how we can participate in his family. Yahweh's word was communicated with us to influence us. Yahweh and his word are one. So, and Yahweh, he elected to speak the eternal word to influence Moshe as God. To approach by saying, speak to prompt a decision. So we've got Dabar, the word, Amar, the promise and the answer, and Dabar again, speak to prompt a decision. And I do want to reinforce what Dabar means. Using the Hebrew letters, Dabar is, in Hebrew letters, doorway, home and family for observant individuals. Observant individuals will find the doorway to Yahweh's home and be part of his family. Now, if you can't get a better, I don't know how you could get a better vision, understanding of what Dabar word means in Hebrew than that. Observant individuals.
Well, it works even better. Yes. Observant individuals will find a home through the doorway to Yah's family in the word.
Yeah, exactly. In Dabar. The word is for observant individuals to find the doorway to Yahweh's home, to enter the doorway through Yahweh's home. That's why the word exists. Speak to prompt a decision to Aaron, which just happens to mean enlightened free will, and Moshe just happens to mean to draw out, and to his sons to draw near by communicating, by answering and promising this demonstrative frame of reference, the outstretched open palm welcoming those who engage, who pay attention, who reach up and stand up in Yahweh's presence. This demonstrative frame of reference, you should always bless, benefiting by lifting up in love, positively and eternally influencing. So this is Aaron. He's asking Aaron to barak. Just as Dod said, I'm going to barak. What is he doing? Yahweh is saying, I want you to always bless, benefiting by lifting up in love, positively and eternally influencing, accordingly, the children of Yisrael. So Yahweh is saying, listen, you know, my goal is to lift up the children of Yisrael. That's who I am. That's what I'm all about. And you, Aaron, can do this by citing the words that I'm going to give you, the words that happen to be in the Torah. So if you cite these words, Aaron, that Yahweh is providing in his Torah, it will be a blessing for the children of Israel. Now, I want to tell you, I get really angry at Christian pastors for stating, you know, may the Lord bless thee and keep thee, and may he make his face to shine upon thee, and taking it out of context and mistranslating it, because this is not a blessing to Gentiles or to their church or for Christians. You know, read the context here. Context is everything. Who is going to be blessed by repeating these words?
The children of Israel.
Period.
Yeah.
Right.
What it says.
Now, are the children of. What is the intersection between children of Israel and the Christian church?
Nothing. No, there's nothing. No.
Parallel lines.
Right. They're holy and completely distinct. In fact, you would be correct to say that they're adversaries because. Christianity grew, Roman Christianity in particular, Roman Catholic Church, grew out of the Roman Empire, which was the most ruthless and vicious enemy of the children of Israel. No one was ruthless and deadly to the children of Israel than Rome, and the Christianity grew out of
it. It was almost
Roman
shocking to me hearing how they illuminated their gardens with Yehud, who were
right.
You know, had a wet Torah wrapped around their head, and then they lit them on fire so they could last longer.
Yes.
They had that wet Torah.
Right, that was what Hadrian did. Yeah, he took anybody who was Torah observant, and he wrapped a waterlogged Torah around them, and then ignited them so that they and the Torah would die a slow and painful death. And he did so for his own entertainment. Rome's bad. And you just don't get any worse than Rome. And so, you know, here you have this blessing is for the antithesis, the enemy of Roman Catholicism, the children of Israel. The enemy of the world, the children of Israel. It is not for Christians. This is not a Christian blessing. And good God, what is the Christian pastor doing citing a passage out of the Torah when Paul told him that the Torah couldn't save? How in the world is Yahweh going to bless them from the Torah if the Torah can't save? Why quote it?
They only do that to sound thoughtful or because they want money. There's only, that was probably inexplicably tied together. But
yeah, may the Lord bless thee and keep thee. May the Lord make his face to shine upon thee. All right, so this, if you want to bless the children of Israel, and you can become a child of Israel, it is racial, it is the direct descendants of Jacob, who was named Israel. It is also spiritual and symbolic. Because the name is Yish Sarah El. Ish individuals who exist and endure, who are empowered by, who strive with God. So that's who this is for. And you will bless them by literally saying to them the following words. So if you want to lift somebody up in love, you will say the following words to them. Yahweh. He wants to kneel down in love to continually bless you, desiring to lift you up forever for your benefit. Barak. Jusuf, third person volition. Peel, the object suffers the effect of the verb's action. Imperfect, ongoing. So Yahweh, he wants to kneel down in love to continually bless you, desiring to lift you up forever for your benefit. And he has decided to actually and continually focus on you. This is called, literally, imperfect, ongoing, Jusuf. This is what he wants. Now, we've been through this, but those are the first two things on the list. And the first thing on the list is the first thing God says after creating mankind. Didn't he say he got down on his knees to lift Adam up in love with his child? That's how he begins. He's reinforcing that here, not changing his perspective. This is the perspective. This is what Yahweh wants to do. He wants to get down on his knees to lift us up in love. And for those of us who shamar, who pay attention to his Torah and prophets and Psalms, who pay attention to him, he will pay attention to us. You know, you want a dad to be involved in your life, right? I think it's Richard we once had a disagreement. I don't think we have a disagreement anymore. And if I've misconveyed this, Richard, I apologize. It's not my intent. But Richard would be engaged in kind of an ongoing dialogue with Yahweh, and I explained that, you know, that's just not what I do. And it's not that I'm saying that you shouldn't. I'm just saying that I think Yahweh gave us two eyes, two ears, and one mouth for a reason. And my favorite way to, and I'm not saying that that another way isn't right. I'm just expressing my perspective here. My perspective is that Yahweh tells us to constantly observe what he has written and constantly listen to what he has said, and then invites us to respond to him. And that the best way to have a conversation with God is to listen to him. He is much smarter than I am. And when we listen to him, that's the best way to engage in a conversation. And you know, when you listen to him and he says something that strikes you as interesting, as affirming, as pleasant, as pleasing, say, you know, that's pretty neat. I like that. And so I respond in that way. And I don't have a problem with somebody that's in a constant conversation. But the point I was going to make is this. If you want God to be involved in your life and you want to have a constant dialogue with God, talking to him, him listening, him responding to you, there's only one way to achieve that, and that is to be part of his family. If you're one of the children of Yisrael that he lifts up in love because of you've become part of his family, you've chosen to become part of his family, then he's going to pay attention to you. So, Richard, if that was your intent, you're getting exactly what you want. I'm getting what I want. God's paying attention to us. Just like I pay attention to my children, I don't pay attention to the neighbor's children. I have no idea where the neighbor's children are. I don't know what they're doing with their lives. I know my children. I know where they are. I know what they're doing with their lives. You know, I'm buying a house next to my eldest because they're having a very important event occurring in their lives, he and his wife. And so we're going to buy a house and be close by. And celebrate that with them. I pay attention to my children.
Let me guess. Does that make you a grandfather then? Or about
I know I'm not in a position until Monday that I can officially say. But it certainly would. I certainly encourage that.
Taking a stab in the dark over here.
Yeah, taking a stab in the dark as to what I'm inferring. But yeah, that's what I'm. I mean, that I can't say that's what I'm affirming because I've been asked. Not to officially announce.
Well, you can't affirm that until Monday.
Right, I can't affirm that until Monday. Yeah. But the point is that we're looking to buy a house and where my son, eldest son, lives because I do exactly what Yahweh does. I have decided to actually and continually focus upon my children. Larry, I don't know where your children are. They're not my kids. I am sure they're very important to you, and I respect that. But I'm not paying attention to your children. I'm paying attention to my children. And I'm jealous for my children. You know, I don't want my children to have another dad. This is how Yahweh is operating. It's within the context. Both of these concepts, the first two here, are within. They can only be understood from the perspective of father and children, or mother and child. Mothers and fathers get down in love to lift their children up, and they're constantly and actually focusing on, paying attention to, being considerate of their children. That is the only way that these first two things can be understood, is from the perspective of father-child, parent and child. All right, so that's interesting that the first two things that he's going to do are things that a dad would do. And a dad doesn't pay attention to the neighbor's children. And all the little children God loves, no. He loves his children. He pays attention to his children.
That's when Yahweh begins to make sense. That's part
right.
of the religious notion that why are there wars? Why do people starve? What are you know, they sound like little crybabies, you know.
Right.
Yahweh said do this. Your parents and your forefathers decided to do that. You didn't question them. You followed complete boobs and religious concepts. So you're unknown. They're unknown.
Give you a couple of examples.
Poor choices.
The fellow that established these websites for yadayah.com and for intro2god.org, even prophetofdoom.net, He was part of a company that I founded that after I left it ceased to exist, and so he found himself in a community that he wanted to continue to live in, but there wasn't a job for being a programmer that paid anything what he needed in that community, and so and it was during this time that he became Torah observant, and he just said, you know, I'm going to prioritize my role as a dad. It's good for my children to be here. It's good for my wife to be here. I don't know how I'm going to put food on the table. I don't know how I'm going to pay the mortgage for our house. But, you know, I'm going to resolutely observe the Shabbat. I'm going to study Yahweh's word. I'm going to answer the invitations to meet with him. I'm going to have my whole family celebrate each of these seven invitations. And we're just not going to stress over it. He made every mortgage payment, and now is actually has two houses, on a larger home, has money in the bank, and eats just fine every day. And he was the most just comfortable saying, "I'm not going to stress over it." He's my dad.
Yeah, he walked it like he was going to talk. I know who you're talking about, it's amazing. You know, I mean, he chose.
It's easy to do that when you know, and it isn't faith based. You
right.
know Yahweh. You love Yahweh. You are Yahweh's child. You know that for a fact, and you know he will make sure you're taken care of. It's easy to relax like that.
This friend of mine is very much like you guys. High character, no nonsense, very bright, and he just immediately got it. The moment that I explained how Yahweh was not religious and how all the things he hated about religion have nothing to do with Yahweh, and that he hates religion even more than the atheist and agnostic do. And this is who he was. It just clicked with him. And it just, from that moment, he's had absolute confidence. I mean, there's almost nothing I can tell him that he says, of course, that's the way it has to be.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, that's something I think everybody has in common. That was the greatest feeling. When I found out that Yahweh was not a religious deity, in other words, he's real. And when he did his creative work, I mean, this was an individual doing this creative work, you know, and he's not a religious deity. I cringe every time people throw up notions that are, you know, of a religious nature. I mean, every aspect of Yahweh has to do with being, you know, an individual who wants a real relationship. And once you get involved in religion and religious myths, you've basically turned Yahweh's entire character into that of a monster.
Yeah, of
because that's what you've got left in religious deities. You don't have anything real.
Yeah. Agreed. You know, Richard, because he shared his testimony on this program, went through a pretty hard time. And no fault of his own. I mean,
yes, he did.
People really dealt badly with him. And yet, you know, he and his wife, while it was a rough year or so, they went hungry, but there was always enough food. They lived in separate shelters, but there was shelter. And they came out of it in the end never allowing themselves to have a bad attitude, never blaming Yahweh, came out in the end together and in a very good situation. Yahweh takes care of his children. He pays attention to his children. And now you have the site that the vast majority of people who listen to Shattering Myths and to this show and who read Yada Yahweh and Yada Yah and question
we all use
all
it
and
promote it.
Yeah, everybody uses
that's
it.
Right.
It's the Bless Yahweh.
Yeah, he's got a
.com site.
People can get into it, you know, because it's not quite as complicated.
Correct.
It's the same thing
I do
with notes.
And he stands right there on the beginning. He says, you know, I don't want any credit for this. I'm going to share my own articles here, and I'm telling you, I don't want a donation. I'm not seeking donations. And yet, you know, it's not cheap to, both in time and money, to do what he has done and is doing, and yet he does it. And this is a guy who didn't have a place to lay his head down at night previously.
Yeah, the whole thing is that you either come to a point where you rely on Yahweh or you can rely on yourself. I'd always rather rely on Yahweh.
I receive once or twice a week a letter from Richard where somebody has written him on his site. And you read his responses, and you know they just convey that he gets it. He knows who we are, what our relationship is with Yahweh, what we're all about, in trying to convey his testimony. It's beautiful. You know, you've got a man who genuinely loves Yahweh, understands his word, is committed to sharing it. And so,
you know, there was I read one of them, and one of the fellas. This was recently. I don't know if you got that email or not, but it's worth mentioning. He said, "Well, if what's the point if you're not going to obey the Torah? You're just like Christians." The answer to that is no, we're not like anything like Christians, not at all, because there's no religion in.
Yeah. We're not obeying it because, by the way, you can't obey
There's
it.
There's a difference
and
between
it, we're never asked to obey
discarding
it.
And obeying.
Right. We're observing it. Yeah, you know, we're observing it. We're asked to listen to
exactly.
it. We're asked to obey it. We're never asked to obey it.
If you truly observe the Torah, that's where you find out Yahweh's offer, and he's not a religious deity. So, you know, we might be people who don't have a bunch of religious rituals, but yet Christians do. Every church I ever went to, they passed the plate around, and they had the Lord's the communion, they called it, but you know, the Lord's Supper, basically. You know, they were breaking the little wafer, you know, the matzah cracker.
Right.
And
yeah, to be
every
just
one
like
of them
Christian,
had
you'd be celebrating Easter and not answering the invitation for Pesach, matzah, and Bukurim. I mean, so the person who wrote the letter.
Mm-hmm.
Is sickeningly deluded. I mean, their comparison is so bad that, and I'm about 3 weeks behind on my email, so it's probably one of the things from Richard that I have not seen yet, because I'm many weeks behind now in my yada yada correspondence. But I would say that when I would see something like that, because now I am grief adverse. So when somebody writes me something now where I used to engage and try to walk them through the process of proper understanding, and I just don't anymore.
You realize that's a 10-year job. I know.
Yeah, I am grief adverse. I mean, yes, I did receive a slander email today, and yes, I did spend much of today translating what I shared in the first hour of the program, but I didn't do it for the individual that wrote the letter. I did it for myself, and then because I wanted to verify that I was just curious. I said, maybe, you know, I'm always open to the idea that maybe I screwed up, and that maybe there is a something in there that says, you know, God just loves us to blow smoke and tell him how wonderful he is. Maybe it's there, and I just missed it.
Yeah.
And so. I went and translated for that reason. I just said, okay, you know, I've been wrong before. Maybe I'm wrong. And so,
you know, you look into the future. look into the future here and picture yourself sitting down and you and Yahweh and a couple of your companions visited some outrageous place and just did the impossible. Okay?
Yeah.
You just did the impossible. Yeah. And you're sitting there around a campfire laughing about it.
Right. Right.
Now picture the other option.
Drinking, by the way, really good wine. And we found out yesterday that cheap wine has arsenic in it. So I'm expecting there to be really good wine in heaven.
And so now you're sitting there around a campfire with Yahweh doing this. Now picture the alternative.
Uh-huh.
I want you to picture the alternative. Yahweh sits in this big chair in this hall like a king does, you know, like this is a kingdom.
Yeah.
And he's sitting in this giant chair, and you walk up and you go, "Oh, I love you so much, Yahweh. I love you. I love you.
Let me bow down. Let me bow down and tell you. Let me bow down and sing your praises.
Yeah, and I've written this new song about you. You're so great, the way you sit there. You know, I know which Yahweh I choose to be with, and it's the real one.
You know, one of the things that I know about my own personality, and I suspect that it's true with both of you guys, and I would suspect it's true with Kirk, and I know it's true with a lot of people that I know that are part of Yahweh's family. I think it's also true with Richard, who we've mentioned several times. I'm not good with authority. I mean, I really dislike authority figures. You know, me and authority, we just don't get along. And I have never viewed Yahweh as an authority figure. I understand who he is. I understand what he's done, and I understand that he is the ultimate authority. But he doesn't interact with his children as an authority. I don't see him as the authority, because that's just not the way that he interacts with us. That's not the way he communicates, not the way he approaches us. That's not the way he wants us to approach him. And so if you were to tell me that in heaven he wants us to spend all of the time kowtowing to his great authority, you know, I think I'm just going to choose to cease to exist. I don't like authority. I'm just not comfortable in it. And, yeah, I understand that Yahweh is a really cool authority, but that's just not how I vision eternity. No, I want the first option.
Not the position he's going to be in for us.
No. No, it's pretty obvious in his own name, where he has a hand reaching down and out to us, and two people lifting up, that he says, "I'm going to make secure and I'm going to empower," his idea is for us to be standing and walking and engaging and exploring and celebrating and singing and drinking with him. Not to him. With him.
Yeah.
Like a toast
to
the queen.
It's not a toast to the queen. It's not a toast to the king. It's not bowing to the king.
Right.
It's like, since he is king, it's like the son and daughters of the king coming into the breakfast room of their mom and father when nobody else is there, and enjoying a good meal together. And what'd you do, Susie, today? You know, what happened? What do you want to share? And then talking,
you know,
and
it's
celebrating
just,
family.
It's right, but it's shocking that people want to hang on to that idea. You know, if you have a God that actually requires worship, you're looking in the wrong place.
Yeah, you are.
And I said
this to people. You want a relationship with that God?
Oh,
right. That's a
I had it up. There's this clown group called 119 Ministries. Every one of them have a donate button on their little web page, okay?
Yeah.
They're an amalgamation of Messianic Judaism and this type of thing, mostly. Some of them are Pauline, some are not. But they all love each other and get along, you know, in the hopes that they can scam people out of money, I guess. And I had it out with them today. He says, "I worship the correct God." And I said, "Well, if you're worshiping God, your God isn't real."
All right.
Oh, they jumped in with both feet. And then, you know, I just used the Torah.
Right.
I just used the Torah. Just put up, oh, good, copy and paste. This is, these are notes I have. You know, these are Torah. Who cares how they get up there? They're there. And I showed it to them, and, boy, they were just beside themselves. They threw up a video real quick. I said, isn't it like a religious boob? You know, you instead of reading the Torah, you simply throw up a video. You know.
Oh, I know.
And then I blocked them.
Some person stating their opinion, not bothering with scripture
at all.
Sure.
Well, it's so easy. Look, Shannon Graham was talking about this group. They were black Hebrews, okay, down in Miami. What they really were murderers, and what he was doing was, you know, just a power grab, and he was trying to put himself in a seat like Louis Farrakhan. He called himself the Messiah, and it was Yahweh ben Yahweh, okay? I am Yahweh, son of Yahweh. I heard him one time in a television interview talk about the money that was coming in, and he says, well, God said, be fruitful, and I bless you, and multiply. See, he wants us to have everything. You know, and that's about how deep every one of his little statements came. You know, just taking everything out of context and trying to direct it, you know, towards, you know, a money grab.
Yeah,
and you
way,
can
being
do
fruit,
that if
being
you use
fruitful
little...
is you're growing, you're producing good fruit. And you're adding children to the covenant. To multiply is to be increased. That's one of the benefits of the covenant, is that we are increased in every possible way. That's the whole transition from being physical and corporeal to being eternal like light. And that's the next statement here, which says, Yahweh, he has chosen to always shine the light of his presence upon you. You know, that's...
Yeah, but it's just, you know, that goes back to what we're talking about, which is looking at things in the context and where they're presented and how, and are we chewing that cud, you know? Let it soak in a little bit. I get the picture. And you know, if people don't do that, then they end up with what? They end up with religions, don't they? And religious leaders and religious doctrines. And they begin attaching religious notions to Yahweh, who hates religion in every fashion right down the line.
Yeah, I actually think these two thoughts, the third and fourth thing that Yahweh is offering, the first two are strictly father-child, parent-child. This idea of focusing on you and getting down on one's knees to lift you up. Those are two are very paternal. These next two are also directly related. Yahweh is going to shine. He wants to shine his light, the very light of his presence, of his nature upon us. And he wants to be generous to us, to be merciful to us. How does Yahweh go about exonerating us, making us look perfect in his eyes?
We're covered in the Ruach, the light.
Right.
That's what
and is the Ruach the maternal manifestation of his light?
Yeah. That's
so
exactly
the way
right.
that Yahweh exonerates us, shows us mercy when we should be convicted, making us look perfect in his eyes, is he covers us in his light. So this says, Yahweh wants the light of his presence. His very nature is light. He wants to shine that upon us. And when he shines that upon us, how much darkness do we have that remains?
None.
These are related concepts. But they're also related
to
the
father. Yeah, that goes to the concept of people who are set apart, or Kodesh, are simply not judged. If you're judged, you're dead.
Correct.
You've lost.
Yeah. Now, this also says, and I think it's related to being a child, one of the benefits of being adopted into the covenant is that we are empowered, enriched with Yahweh's testimony and empowered. The empowerment is being transformed into energy, into light. That's how we're empowered. And this is what Yahweh is doing for his children. For his children, he is merciful, and he provides mercy, which is being generous and compassionate, by empowering us with his light, by perfecting us with his light. These are paternal things. It's the two things that Yahweh wants to do. He wants his light to be part of us so that we are enriched and empowered and perfected. Those are very good things. And then it says that Yahweh, it is his desire to actually lift us up into his presence. So when we become spiritual, that we're now light. When we are vindicated because we're surrounded by his life, when Yahweh has lifted us up and is focused on us as his children, then he can lift us up into his presence, can't he? Did he say that he wants us to lift him up?
No.
Never.
No.
I don't think I could do it. I don't think anybody
You were once
do
a bodybuilder.
So.
You want to try to lift up God?
No,
No. Yahweh, his desire is to actually lift us up into his presence. And he can do that when we're immersed in his light. When he has lifted us up, he can do that. And he has chosen to place upon you, caring for you, moving towards you, in the name and the cause of reconciliation. This is Shem, which can mean name, and it can mean to place upon. And what he is doing, he's lifting us up into his presence because he has chosen to place upon us the name of reconciliation. He can do, all he has to do is reconcile the relationship, the covenant relationship. And we are his children, and we can be in his presence, and that's the story. It's
I first read that, I thought reconciliation was an interesting word to finally come to for shalom, you know, but it fits here.
Yeah, you know, shalom is usually translated peace. But what it means is that a conflict is reconciled. So if you reconcile a conflict, you have peace between the parties. It's the restoration of a relationship so that the relationship is now tranquil and harmonious. It's prosperous, it's peaceful, it's favorable, it's friendly. And so shalom means all of those things. It's a very relational concept that speaks that all aspects of the relationship are positive, friendly, reconciled. The nature of the relationship has been restored. That's what it means. It's a relational term.
Yeah.
You know, if you had an issue, Larry, with your son, and you guys were fighting, and there was separation because you were fighting, if you reconcile that relationship, you'd get the chance to embrace one another, wouldn't you?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's what it means. So it's speaking of a relationship, and you'd restore the relationship and the fellowship of relationship in the family. So those then become number 5 and 6 on this list. God wants to lift us up into his presence. So, by the way, if he lifts us up into his presence, aren't we standing before him? He didn't say, I want to push you down in my presence. He said, I want to lift you up in my presence.
Yeah, he didn't say he was going to put you in submission or a
Right, no, I want to lift you up in my presence. Sense. And I want to care for you by placing on you the name of reconciliation, of restoring the relationship. And so they shall choose to place, accordingly, my personal and proper name upon the children of Yisrael. So what's 7? You know, it's always in Yahweh's word, there's 6 things that lead to the 7th. In this case, there were 6 things. Yahweh said, there's 6 things that I want to do, and then the 7th is what you want to do in response to that. And so here's the 7th. And so they shall choose to place, accordingly, my personal and proper name upon the children of Yisrael. So Israel becomes Yahudah, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And we become, as the children of Israel, we have Yahweh's name placed upon us. We become his children. We bear his name. We choose his name. So if we respond to what Yahweh is offering, which is to get down to lift us up, to lift us up into His presence, to shine the very light of His presence on us, to be merciful to us, to reconcile the relationship and restore us to full fellowship in that relationship. If we choose those things, if we accept those things, then we will also choose to place His name upon us. Now, that's the conclusion. So the children of Yisrael will accept the name. Do the children of Yisrael now, as racial descendants of Jacob, place the name of Yahweh upon them?
No. No, they call themselves Jewish today.
Correct. Yeah, they don't. They do not do it. There will be a time when they will. And in the meantime, those of us who have chosen to be adopted into His family, we do it. You know, we speak in the name of Yahweh. We associate with the name of Yahweh. We boast in the name of Yahweh. And then God concludes by this: and I myself will continually kneel down in love to bless them, positively and beneficially influencing them by lifting them up. So He has seven things on the list. And when we bear His name, He reinforces the opening line, which was the opening line in the Torah to humankind. And I will continually kneel down in love to bless them, positively and beneficially influencing them by lifting them up. What we should expect in eternity, then, Larry, to use your example, between the individuals who are bowing down to Yahweh and those that are growing with Yahweh, exploring with Yahweh, celebrating with Yahweh, is that God is going to constantly lift us up. Always. So in the relationship, we won't be lifting Him up. He's going to be lifting us up. That's what dads do. And dads don't do it from a perspective of sacrifice. I have never made done anything for my children that I thought was a sacrifice. Ever.
Oh, darn. I got to sit down and play with my kid now.
Yeah.
Isn't life so horrible?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've got to buy a house and a place that I would never choose to buy a house, because I have to participate in my son's life. No. I get to buy a house. I'm trying to get rid of one house,
you
so
know,
I can buy a house that's near my son, because I want to continue to enjoy being part of his life.
Being a part of his life.
Yes. And that's what Yahweh says, that he's going to, that forever he's going to be dad. You know, yes, we're going to be buds. Yes, we're going to be friends. Yes, we're going to relate to each other as individuals. But the father-son, father-daughter relationship that Yahweh has established is never going to change. He's always going to be dad. Even in eternity, when He makes us so much more like Him, He's still dad. I'm going to tell you, it works for me.
Well, it does. I mean, you know, something else that works if people are real. Have you ever been accused of really respecting somebody maybe too much? I mean, I have a couple of times. Not often. But I have.
Yeah.
And, you don't have to go out and sing, as you call blowing smoke. You don't have to blow smoke at something that's real.
Uh-huh.
You just don't have to.
You don't have to.
I mean,
and the person that you're doing
for
it for is going to be really uncomfortable if they hear you're doing it.
Right.
People don't like
it. I mean,
people that are comfortable doing what they're doing and who they are don't like to have people blow smoke at them. There's for two reasons. One is everybody genuinely knows that they're not worthy of praise. I mean, I don't care. You know, even if you're especially if you're a pope or a king, you're not worthy of praise. And so it's so disingenuous. And also, one of the things you learn is that, there's a period of time where I had a lot of employees and ran some pretty good-sized businesses. And when I did that, there were lots of people who I knew were trying to butter me up, trying to flatter me because they wanted me to have a positive view. view of them. And, gosh, it's so disgusting. I just hated it. And so, you know, a lot of people think that people like to be praised. No. No. It's really uncomfortable. Let's change the subject. Go on to something else. Let's be real. You know, and as a boss of a company, as a founder of a company, if I felt that way, you imagine Yahweh as the founder of the universe? And somebody comes up to him and tries to flatter him or tell him how wonderful he is.
Oh,
it,
that falls so short. I mean, that's talk about missing the mark.
Right. Let's talk about something that's interesting. You know, and one of the things, too, is if you're ever in a position and somebody is crediting you with something or praising you for something, and if you know that if you buy into that, you are going to fall hard. Just don't do it. Never buy into it. Because the fall is terrible. You can't live up to it. You can't live up to that standard. You don't even want to try.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that, I mean, you can even go, I have a small company, and, you know, I've set a model up now where people work out of their homes, but I used to have an office building with, you know, eight guys on the telephone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd walk in, and I was special, you know, and it's just like, oh, come on. You know, you start adding on, then you get a big company, you know, where you got 600 employees or whatever. Then it's got to be insane. And then you put yourself in the position of Yahweh. I mean, we can't do that, but we can consider that you're the creator of the universe and you got people coming up doing that. I mean, to what end? Why?
To what end?
You know,
and that's kind of why I think that Yahweh is actually more comfortable with the guy that says, you know, I really like him, than the person who tells him that he or she loves him.
Yeah, right. That's right. I mean, you know, it's more important to like Yahweh, and through that you end up, you know, depending upon him. I mean, if you can get to that point, that stage.
When you like somebody, you want to be with them.
Yeah. I love the knowledge of the Torah. I absolutely love it. I like the understandings of it. I like getting into the Torah and really biting into the Torah.
Yeah.
And
I enjoyed today where I was trying to find out, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are places where God really wants us to sing his praises. And then
it turns out that...
You know, it is Dode saying that, yeah, I really appreciate, my soul really appreciates who Yahweh is. And when it comes to the human that's got his way and Yahweh who has his way, that I'm always going to side with Yahweh because I really like him and his way. Yeah, that's what he's saying. And is he expressing gratitude? You betcha. Is he expressing admiration? Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not some Hallmark moment, you know. I mean, really, it's beyond that because it's real. You know, we're taught. You know,
no,
I was thinking about
you know how we know it's real. He said that he was constantly discerning, exercising good judgment, and tossing aside this guy that had his own message. That's real.
Yeah. Well, you know, it would be pretty hard. For a huckster to come up and put himself, you know, exalt himself into some position of leadership using religion around any of us, because we'd all know it's BS. I mean, I don't care what they said, what they did, what they claimed to know. It wouldn't matter to me. They, you know, they're not going to be, you know.
Knowing the Torah, for example, I know that the President of the United States is full of dung. When he is,
yeah, there's not even,
and he is universally and wholly and completely opposed to Israel. And
praise on behalf.
Yeah, and so I know that the President of the United States is full of dung. That he is a despicable individual, and that any American who salutes that flag of the nation who is now an avowed enemy of Israel is in a very vulnerable position with God, because he's made his position clear on how he's going to respond to those who are opposed to his children. And so, you know, when you read the Torah, and if that's your perspective, things get pretty clear, don't they? You're pretty hard to fool or be played.
Yeah, well,
fool,
once you
know,
understand Yahweh's offer, what is his nature, you know, his nature is the most appealing thing to me. The offer is as appealing, but the nature is every bit as appealing. You know, I knew there was a creator out there, okay? I just didn't know how to get to him. And so it turns out he's got this roadmap. I was telling my wife the other day, I said, look, you know, if I said, here's a roadmap to get to $1 billion that I have stashed away.
Right.
You need to follow that and you'll get that $1 billion. How in the hell could you take that roadmap and look at it and say, this is Larry's Law? It wouldn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
Or would you discard that roadmap? Would you call that roadmap?
You know, there's nobody that would. There's nobody that would. And the reason that they don't take the time to follow the Torah is, quite frankly, they don't believe it. They think it's boring religious stuff. That's what
I had a guy
believe.
Here today that was a billionaire. You know, I've got to meet his wife and his daughter, and he's got the same aches and pains that everybody else does. And you might say, oh, boy, you know, he's really got it made. No, he's got his challenges. And you could tell that he has his challenges. And, you know, $1 billion would be a nice chunk of change. However,
right.
When you compare that to what Yana was offering, it's chump change. And he has he's provided the map to something that is infinitely superior in every possible way to $1 billion. And the way our government's going,
yeah, because you'd never have a need. You'd laugh. You'd burn $1 billion at a campsite.
Right.
That's what you do with it. You don't have any use for it.
That's right. I have any use for it? No. You've got use for is family. What you've got use for is life. What you've got use for is growing. What you've got use for is learning. What you've got use for is celebrating the relationship. That's what you got use for. That's the stuff that matters. And so Yahweh's giving you the roadmap to eternal life, a life of constant discovery and celebration and joy and party and a literal celebration of relationship, of doing stuff together with the creator of the universe. That's it's a lot better than $1 billion.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt about it. But, again, I think that goes back to the fact that you kind of have to get, I don't know, you get fed up with lies. You got to be fed up with lies. And then you
if
have
you
to
were
start
to give
looking
me
for the truth.
All of the wealth of the entire world, and you were to give me control over the entire world, if the entire world was mine, and every people served, every person on this planet served me and loved me, and if I had all of the wealth in the world and I was uniquely empowered in the entire world, and you were to ask me if owning the entire world and having the entire world love me back and owning the entire world and having all the wealth in the world and having a fountain of youth that would cause me to be able to live for thousands of years, if I would trade that for being just one of the kids in the covenant family, I wouldn't even think of it for a nanosecond.
Don't even require thought.
Hell no. First of all, I don't even want the first. And I love and need the second. Yeah. Wouldn't even want the first. No, it did.
Yes,
all the riches in the world,
I wouldn't
trade.
You've actually come to understand the Torah is real. And you understand the offer.
Right.
But see, this is...
And the
reason
person making the offer.
Yeah, but we're down to thousands out of billions. For a reason.
Right.
Because there's not that many people. This is why I found out, you know, you can't just give yada yada to somebody.
No.
You can't. I mean, on average, you cannot. I'm telling you, you can't.
No.
Because you hand it to them, and you know, the months that it requires, you know, to sit down and actually read it, to think about these things, to chew on it.
Yeah.
But you can give them a statement here and a statement there and a statement here and a statement there and a statement. Pretty soon they start putting things together. That's what I've found.
Yeah.
And boom, then they're off and running. Because people are willing to invest a little time to find the truth, but they're not, for the most part, not willing to put
There are exceptions.
There are.
Kirk and Terry Miller. Kirk, who participates very often in Chattering Myths and has recently participated here in this program. He and his wife heard one of the radio shows that I did, and she did, and said, you know, I'm going to go there. And then they both were questioning Christianity, and they both started reading it. First was, this can't be right. And then it was, oh, my goodness, this is exactly what's right.
Yeah, it turns out it's true. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, well, the same things happened to me.
Right, and so they spent every night reading it to one another. And so there are individuals who are so open to who got the fellow I was talking to that was worked with me in my last company. That has been donated so much of his time freely to build these websites. I couldn't get enough of it. Read everything. Couldn't get enough of it. It was
UL.
All-consuming. UL.
Right.
Yeah. All-consuming. UL.
Yeah.
And
I get that. You know, I did the same thing.
I have a good friend who's a surgeon in Arizona, pulmonary surgeon. He was the first
doctor
to read this very early on when I was just starting to write it. Couldn't get enough of it. I mean, every time I'd finish a chapter, he'd say, send it to me.
Incidentally, are you and he still in contact fairly often?
Oh, he calls probably every other week, and we talk on the phone every other week.
Oh,
he came to visit me in Virginia. Oh, I love them. I throw out the word love.
I only heard that she. No,
we are good friends. We have a great relationship.
The richness of that relationship.
It's a rich, engaged, ongoing relationship. We are good friends and brothers. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've only heard him talk once on the radio, and it was just for this little short segment where he called in one time.
Yeah.
I'd really like to hear his perspective.
Oh, yeah, he's a great guy.
I know.
Now, his perspective
as a doctor.
His perspective is different than mine, in the sense that I'm adopted. I'm a goyim who was adopted in the family. Would I prefer to be a Yehudim in the family? Yeah, probably. But he is actually a Yehudim. He was an agnostic Jew, and so his perspective is the perspective of somebody that grew up in the Jewish culture, in the Jewish community, who has, you know, an extraordinarily deep affinity for Yisrael.
Yeah, so, you know, Lisa Bonet is the same way. She you know, she grew up Jewish in the United States, in her family. Her grandma had a particular hatred for the rabbis, and then her perspective was to go out and look, and she said, I finally found the truth with the goy, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's her perspective, but I know
perspective
on the
rabbis. All these rabbis all this time have been misleading me, and I hear I find this goy that is actually telling me what my God had to say.
Exactly. Kind of wild, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, it is what it is.
You know, and you know, be clear. The goy is not a messenger. The goy is not a prophet.
The goy is
a flawed translator who just happens to love Yahweh's testimony and loves it so much that he spends a lot of time on it and wants to share what he's learned. that's good enough, I think. I think that's okay.
Yeah, you know, but I do remember his perspective of rabbis was about that of Lisa's.
Ooh.
Because
that's the one thing
I heard him speak about, and he couldn't have been more clearer.
Oh,
and it was
just a
couple of sentences.
Yeah, he's told me specifically how bad they were to him and how ruthless they were to his children and how happy he is now that both of his sons, after being indoctrinated in Orthodox Judaism by these rabbis, have both come out of it now as agnostics. And he says it's just a matter of time that Yahweh's message is going to resonate with them, and they're going to move from agnostic to covenant. But getting them from religious to agnostic was so challenging because the rabbis are vicious in this regard.
Oh, religion is just such a killjoy. I mean, the whole point of religion is just submission. It's just worthless trash.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, I worship God. I worship the right God. if you're worshiping God at all, you're worshiping, you're involved with the wrong creator.
Yeah.
Simple
with,
as that.
What's your God's name, by the way? And would you just tell me how your God can be so great if man killed him?
Yeah.
And I'd like an explanation of that. And for this person that says if you're not obeying the Torah, then you're just like the Christians. Well, why don't you show me where Yahweh tells us to obey the Torah? Why don't you tell me where Yahweh defines Torah as a set of laws? And you tell me what the Hebrew word is for obey, because I want to look it up.
Oh, I wanted to ask you. I was going to send you an email. This year, and I don't know if you've sat down and done the homework on it yet, are you going with the astronomical, or are you going with the
I did the homework on it. I've set it aside for right at the moment, so I don't know what. But I looked at it. This year is really, really tough, and the reason it's really tough
is
that my normal is that I go with the astronomical. If the moon sets after the sun sets, and there is a renewal of light on the moon's surface before after the sun sets and before the moon sets, then I count that as the first day of the first month. And so that's the standard that I have used. But I've always had a little caveat. I remember, I don't want to be accused of being a Netanyahu and going back on my
First would be tonight. I mean, this
right.
would be
and,
the first.
Right,
this
and the and the and the issue that I have here is that I think the amount of light that is on the moon's surface when it sets for that to be the first night has to be discernible. And in this case, it's a fraction of 1% within a minute of the time that the moon sets. And it's not 1%, it's a fraction of 1%. So I'm not so sure that the astronomical is right this time. So, I'm going to look at it again tomorrow, and I'm going to scratch my head. But I remember about 2 weeks ago, I looked at it and said, oh, boy, on this one, I'm going to be put to the test because somebody is going to realize that I may not be consistent with what I've said in the past. Because it's if I'm remembering this correctly, this year it's a fraction of 1% of renewal on the moon's surface when it sets, which is just minutes before the sun sets or after the sun sets. Is that correct, Laura? You looked at it.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. I'm sitting here trying to.
I think I'm going to go the next day because I think that's just too thin.
It's pretty thin. But I think, again, it's predictive. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's 0.105%.
Yeah, not 1.1.
0.105% visibility.
Yeah. So I was right then. So my memory is still, I'm getting old, but my memory didn't fail me. It's 0.1%. Yeah, that's just not enough.
Yeah. I'm going to go with tomorrow as the first, probably.
Yeah, I think I am.
Basically put Passover as starting 2 weeks from today.
Yeah.
We'll be doing the show as Passover begins for me.
Yes. That's what I'm going to go with, too. I'm much more comfortable with that. So we're in the same position on this. And by the way, Larry, I like the fact that you asked me what I was going with. And JB, I'm glad you said for me. Because we've made it very clear, we are not trying to be an authoritative voice here saying this is when it is, and we know it, and we're sure, and if you're not doing it like we're doing it, then you're wrong. We're not saying that at all. We're saying that.
Now, the only people I'm being authoritative to are the ones who are coming to my house, because this is when I'm going to be doing it. If you're coming to my house, this is
that's right.
When I'm doing
there
it.
There you go. There you go. And that's appropriate. But I think that Yahweh, I know for certain that Yahweh in his communication of the timing of Pesach and Matzah and Bukurim, gave us information that precludes us being dogmatic.
Yeah.
Precludes being dogmatic. And so when somebody says to me, I can't believe that you think that God is arbitrary on this, it's absolutely, he wants us to do it on the right day. And he has a day certain. And you know, and you ought not say that it's subject to interpretation. But the fact is, it is.
I actually think that that was one of the things the fellow that brought up, you're just like Christians, that I think he said that either you or me said it doesn't matter what day. It doesn't matter. But what you've said is not that it doesn't matter, you know, hey, do it 5 days later. You've said that there's not an information there to say you're definitively correct at any point.
Right.
And that's
there is no way to tell you for certain if it's going to be 2 weeks from Thursday, 2 weeks from Friday, 2 weeks from Saturday. It's going to be one of those 3 days.
There's no question about it that today would be the first day. I mean, it's the first, it's the new month.
Right.
Month and starts today.
And so, therefore, are you, I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I'm just saying that Yahweh does not allow us to be dogmatic and say that it has to be this day. It's usually within, you know, you can make a good argument for one, two, or three different days. And that will be the case this year, that you can make an argument for a couple of days being the beginning of it. And I think
I'm probably going to go with the observational Friday, the April 3rd. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and I might as well. And I think I did write it down as Friday. But the thing here that's important is answering the invitation, celebrating the purpose, accepting the offer. Those things are really important. Knowing what the day represents, understanding what Yahweh is offering to us and capitalizing upon it are absolutely essential. And there's not one Christian in the world.
He clearly says it's for the purposes of understanding. It's not for the purposes of submitting. It's not for any of that. It's for the purposes of understanding.
And
the more you know.
We have Yahweh telling us that when Hezekiah asked for a 2-week extension, Yahweh didn't say no. You know, I've got a certain day. You do it on my timeline or it can't be done. No. He said you can do it. That's fine.
Yeah,
and
there's,
then we'd like to do it for another week. Is that okay? Yeah. Is the time of it as important to Yahweh as the purpose of it? Of course not.
Yeah, the purpose of it is understanding, and he doesn't accidentally put things like what happened with Hezekiah in his Torah by accident. You know, they're there for a reason. You know?
It's there. He's teaching us a lesson. Like the exemption on food is there for a reason. He wants us to be thoughtful. He wants us to think about this. And we benefit from it when we understand what he's inviting us to and how we can capitalize on this marvelous offer. That's what teaching is all about. It's what guidance is for. The roadmap to the most wonderful gift that's ever been offered. So, well, gentlemen, we've done 2 full hours. Our friend JB has extended the show, so we record and broadcast for 2 full hours, which I think worked out just beautifully tonight. It won't work out every night, but it worked out beautifully tonight. And so I want to thank
you guys. We put it at 2 hours. If we cut it off at an hour and 45, it works. That way, because we were tending to go over the hour and a half, and people were missing it, so I thought I'd boost it up a bit and see how it worked.
This is a fun way to spend the start of the Shabbat.
Yep. My favorite way.
Hallelujah. Let's radiate Yah's light and enjoy the whole experience. So, fellas, I enjoyed it, as usual.
All right. Thank you. I did too. I really did. It was enlightening, and I hope everybody has a good foreshadowing of the 7th. You know?
You betcha. Good night.
Good night.